Yesterday's daf was daf mem test. Today's daf nun. We'll do a review of yesterday's daf. Get to today's. Have in mind that our learning should be a schus for all Yidden Eretz Yisrael. They should all be safe. Hashem should protect them, as well as the chayalim, and also the chatufim should be freed. And Liloy Nishmas Yitzchak Keshel ben Avram Gedalia Sar Bas Menachem Bas Ami Bas Shlomi Zalman Yirmiyo. And Rufus Shleim for Adas Vesronya, for Miriam Baset Yizisov, Yitzchok Ben Yal Zahava, and Chai Rochel Bas Devoira, and Tzvito Ben Chasha, and Yisrael Yeshua Ben Mina, Chava Bas Tal Hinda, and Shoshana Goldbracha Bas. Yeah, Alrina, the Sof Shechol Yisrael. And with that, let's get started on the review. What did we learn yesterday?
And all the guys that need it.
Right, B'Sof Shechol, that's what I said. That's in Hebrew. I'll translate for you. Amongst all others who are sick, who could use the refuah. Okay.
Restarting.
So we're at the Leimuket Tanai at the bottom of the page, towards the bottom of the page on Daf Mem Ches. So we want to say that this argument over here between Rav and Rabbi Yochanan is actually a previous machlokas amongst the Tanoim, whether, and again, the question on the table is, when there is a down payment, how do we understand that? Is that basically a purchase of the entire thing, and it's all or nothing? If he doesn't come up with the rest of the money, it's a forfeited thing. Or is it purchased to the amount of the money, and he gets him up to that amount? That's basically the two sides that we saw between Rav and Rav Yochanan. And we want to say it's machlokas tanoim that we find with regards to loans. So there's a halacha of shmitas ksafim that means on the sabbatical year there's a canceling of debt. But what if the debt has a collateral attached to it? So, according to Rav Shimon Gamliel, even if the collateral is only worth half of the debt, it doesn't matter, it doesn't get wiped away. And according to Rav Yehuda Hanasi, if the mashkon is equal to the loan, then it doesn't get wiped away. But otherwise, it does get wiped away. Now, what are we talking about? Which part are we getting wiped away or not getting wiped away, according to Rav Shimon Gamliel? If it means that it's not wiping away it just to the extent of the loan, of the collateral, that's what's not wiped away by Shemitah. So then what is Rabbi Yehuda Hanasi saying? That even that half is also wiped away? Everything's wiped away, even though he has a mashkon? So what's the purpose of the mashkon? It did nothing. So it must be that when Rabbi Shimon Gamliel says it doesn't get wiped away, means it's in its entirety the debt is still collectible. And Rabbi Yehuda Hanasi, what's wiped away is only that half that does not have collateral opposite. So the Gemara, and the Machlokas therefore is Rabbi Shimon Gamliel says that the collateral is connected kulay, hukaina, and Rabbi Yehuda Hanasi is only connected, and that's the Machlokas, and we have basically a Machlokas Tanayim regarding what the Machlokas is between Rabbi and Rabbi Yehuda. So Gemara says, not true. Really, what it means in a Meshamet that Rav Shimon Gamliel is talking about is only to the half that the mashkan exists, the value of up to the value of the mashkan, which would mean that Rav Yehuda Hanasi is saying that even that half gets wiped away, and the answer is yes. So what's the purpose of the mashkan? You're absolutely right. It's not to be a source of repayment. It's just what we call a zichron dvar ba'alma. It's a reminder that there's this debt here, and that's all it is. And it does not mean anything more than that, it does not meant as a means of collection either. Okay. I have a story with Rav Kahana. He gave money for he was given money for flax, that he was a flax salesman. In the end, the flax went up in value, and he asked Rav, what do I have to do? So Rav told him, to the money that you could receive, that you still have to, he gave you a partial payment. So to the amount that he paid, that's what you got to give him flax at that price. But whatever he didn't pay, that's only words. You only had a verbal agreement, and there's no issue, and it's not a problem of being a breach of trust. The fact that you're changing, you want to retrade.
I'm just wondering if there was a signed agreement, would that make a difference?
I don't know. Good question. It sounds like So anyway, it was just a verbal. Anyway, it's clearly this was just a verbal. That's not called mechuzrei aman. That's not called a breach of trust. That's shitas rav. As we saw this already, this is dvarim. What is the status of dvarim? You gave a commitment, an oral commitment. What status is it? So according to Rav, it's not a breach of trust. That was then. Circumstances changed. Yes, that's true. I said I'll buy this at this price. I did say that, and I did mean it then. But that was then, and now is now, and you know, times changed, and the deal changed, and I'm not still at that deal. This is even better than that, because here you agreed on the price, and you paid part of it, but you didn't pay all of it. So the point, whatever you didn't pay, doesn't hold you to the rest of the deal. Rabbi Yochanan says, no, that's mechusrei amana, that's a breach of trust, and that's a big problem. Now, so Rabbi Yehuda, we ask a question from Rabbi Yehuda. He says that when the pasuk says hin tzedek, why do you have to say hin tzedek? It could have just left it at eifet tzedek. That means have fear and accurate weight. Well, hin is 12 lug, and eifet is 72 lug. So why, if one has to be righteous, they all have to be righteous. You don't, you give an example. It does, you know. So why would you have to say hin? That's the question. The answer is that your yes needs to be tzedek. When you say hin, hin is a hint to the word hein, which means yes. Your yes has to be a yes, and your no has to be a no. You can't just start, making up stuff. Okay, that's the and that's the kasha on Rav. So Abaye says no. It means something else. What that's talking about is a different thing. That means you meant to be at the time you're being deceitful. You're echad bepev, echad b'leiv. Your mouth said A, but you meant B, or you were thinking B. That's a different story. That's deceiving. That's when your hein is not a tzedek. But over here, what then was then, now's now, times change, situations change, the price changed, deals off. That's all. Okay. So we have another kasher. Shimon says that even though a talis requires the dinner, zahav, and the dinner zahav doesn't acquire the talis, nevertheless, although that is the halacha, but if a guy paid and you don't provide for him the talis that you agreed on, that's a mishapara. Okay, and because it's a mishapara for anybody who's not oimed b'diburai. So doesn't that really mean that you have to stick to your word? So it sounds like, so Gemara says, yes, that's what Rav Shimon says, but there's another Tana out there, and that's this Tana story with Rabbi Yochanan ben Masya. Rabbi Yochanan ben Masya told his son, I need you to hire workers. So he went to hire workers, and then part of the deal that he told the workers is that you'll get X amount of money, and we'll provide lunch. That's why he left it vague. So when things came to the father, he said, that's a big problem. Son, you messed up. Why? Because the lunch goes not by what you think lunch should be. It goes by what the type of lunch that these people deserve. They happen to be none other than Bnei Avraham Yitzchak Yaakov. They're celebrities. And therefore, they deserve, even if you provide a meal that's through the Shlom B'Shaita, the fanciest meal that you could conjure up, that's not enough. And you'll never be Yotzir Chayv. And therefore, what you're going to have to do is you got to, before they start working, go back and say, the condition is that I'll provide lunch, but I'm saying what I mean. I mean, pas v'kidnes, pita and chumos. That's all I mean. I don't mean lunch. I mean that type of lunch. Anyway, so the question is, if Devarim is Chumuchos Remana, so then how can he go back and go retrade if they didn't start work yet? The answer is, that doesn't prove that there's another Tana out there. The answer is there, the workers themselves do not really rely, because they know it's the son, and they know the decision maker is really the dad. So they're waiting. Now, because so they know that, okay, so then the question is, if that's true, why, if they did start work, it's too late? The answer is because if they started work, they obviously trusted that. They said, look, the son probably told the father, and that we agree, and he's good with it, so that's it, we can start working. So then they do rely on it. Okay.
Is that so wages, is the food?
No. Besides, it was the agreed upon wages, plus he said lunch is included. That's a big problem. You can't say lunch is included. You have to say what type of lunch is included. Uh-huh. $10 allowance towards lunch is included. Okay. You want to spend more? It's on you. Okay.
You do lunch and learning, you have to pay. No, this definitely, you're just getting this. You're not getting.
Lunch alone is different. That's
$100. No, you get
each person's right. Okay. All right. It says the Gemara. Does Rabbi Yochanan really say this? Because Rabbi Yochanan said the name of Rabbi Yochanan. Somebody tells his friend, "I'm giving you a gift. You can still change your mind. No, you don't have to give that gift." So you could change your mind. Of course, you could. It's just wrong to do so. So what? Nobody. You know, like there's no document, no contract signed, no nothing. So you said you'll do something. So of course you could. What it means is it's mutter lachzibay. You can't. It's permissible to change your mind. So you see, Rabbi Yochanan himself says that you don't have to keep your word. So our Papa says, but Rabbi Yochanan agrees if it's a matana muatas that he's samcha tatay, and that's really the point. The point is, if you trust that that's what's going to happen, then that's what obligates you. That means that it was a breach of trust. But over here, you know, you say you're going to give you, I'm going to give you $1 million. And the guy's like, yeah, right. Okay, well, I'll believe it when I see it. In the meantime, I'm not holding out on that. I mean, I'm not holding my breath. Okay? But if it's if he says, I'll give you a quarter, then you believe it.
Well, great question. The upper first case, we talked about the business deal. That's a reasonable thing. You expect the guy to keep his word in a business deal.
Yeah, that's you're saying, right? That's exactly right. But exactly. So we're talking about a major law. Okay. Anyway, so this is the. So it makes sense because Rabbi Fos and the Rabbi Yochanan that when a Yisrael tells a Ben Levi that I have some Maaser Rishon, a whole core of Maaser Rishon that I'm giving to you, so that Ben Levi is allowed to trust that he's going to get it. And he can make it for his Trumas Meiser on other Meiser that he has to give to the Kohen. Now, if you say that he can't change his mind, meaning he's not allowed to, but he's not allowed to. So then that's why he's allowed to trust that it's going to happen. But if you say that he could retract, then wouldn't that be a problem of feeding Tevel, eating Tevelim? So the Gemara says not necessarily. Maybe it's talking about where he made a kinyan on it. The problem is that Gemara says definitely didn't make a kinyan on it, because it says that if he ended up giving it to another Ben Levi, so then all you have is a complaint. If you actually made a kinyan, then you have a lot more than a complaint. He stole from you. That's a real thing. So obviously he never made a kinyan, and therefore that's why it's only a complaint and nothing more than that. But anyway, the bottom line is. That's the case, that in general, if it's not a large gift, then you are samichtas, and then you are obligated to do it, but on something that's very large, that you're not bound to it, really. That's the idea, because he doesn't expect it. Okay, so we have here a story, and then the real story. Okay, so the first version of the story was that there was somebody who gave money for sesame, and the price of sesame shot through the roof, and the person who agreed retraded and said that it's more, and he says, I'm not giving you any sesame, here's your money back. And the guy says, I'm not taking my money, and the guy stole it. And they came to Rav, and he said, take your money, you decided not to take it, that's not his problem. Not only is he not a Shomer Sochar, he's not a Shomer Chinam, and therefore it got stolen, it's not his problem at all, even if it was negligence. And so that was the version that we were told of the story. The rabbis told Rava, but what about the Mishapara? He says, you're absolutely right, there is still a Mishapara. And that was the end of that story. Now, then we saw that Rav Papi said, I heard from Ravina, who heard the story from the rabbi himself, who would happen to Rav Tavos or Rav Shmuel Bar Sutra, and first of all, you have to know who these rabbis were. They never would change their word, their commitment. It doesn't matter for all the money in the world, they wouldn't change their commitment. Okay? You got the story completely wrong. What it was Erev Shabbos, close to Shabbos. It was Friday, late afternoon. And the guy came to the door and he said, can you sell me some sesame? And the guy said, no, I don't have sesame to sell you. Finished. And then he says, well, then what am I going to do with my money? I needed, I'm not going to make it home in time with the money. So can you hold on to the money? So he says, look, my house is open. Put it where you want, and you'll come back for after Shabbos. Okay, anyway, sure enough, it got stolen over Shabbos. So that was the case. It came before Rav. Rav said that when he says that type of learning, oh, look, my house is open, put it where you want, that means he's not taking any responsibility, not a Shomer Sochar, not a Shomer Chinam, nothing. Mm-hmm. And therefore, he's not responsible for being stolen. So Gemara says, yeah, but what about the end of the story? that the rabbi said that there's a mishapara. He says lo yahayu tvarim ba'olam lahadam. That never happened. That part of the story. That was an add-on. Okay, somebody's trying to embellish the story. It never happened. Okay, which brings us. Okay, that's how these things happen. All right. Anyway, brought us to. All right. So Reb Shimon said that whoever has the money is in the stronger position. So Reb Shimon says that's only if the money and the payros are still by the seller. But if the money is by the seller and the payros are by the buyer, then nobody can change the deal. It's done. So the Gemara says, because the money's where? That's the Gemara saying. So the Gemara says, if it's in the hands of the seller, it means that the meikas was in the hands of the seller, which means is that once the item is transferred hands, so then nobody can change their mind. Rava says it's and the chiddush there is, and this is what's interesting, is that we're talking about a case where it happens to be that the place where the item is being stored belongs to the buyer, and the renter is renting the space from the buyer, and the whole purpose of why the rabbis instituted that the kinyan needs to take place by the transfer and not by the cash is because maybe he'll claim nisr chitech ba'aliyah and he will have no ways of taking care of it because it's by the seller. But over here, it's actually in the buyer's property, and if he knows it's his stuff, so of course he's going to be pushing himself to save it. So, and it sounds like that nevertheless, we made like a low plug, a low distinction that we always do it this way. There was a fellow, story goes, there was a fellow who gave money for wine. In the end, he heard that that there was a major wedding coming up. He didn't need the wine anymore. So he says, you know, I want my money back, and I don't need the wine anymore. So the case came before Rav Chisda. The guy says, what do you mean? But you paid. Too bad. He's like, no. The takana of Meshicha is that it's not sold until he takes possession. So you could change your mind, and he also could change his mind. So just like you, the seller, can say, I don't want to give it to you, so to the buyer can say, I don't want it anymore, give me my money back, and that's the bottom line. Which took us to the next topic, which is, what is the shear of onah? How much qualifies as overcharging that the pasuk talks about? So it says, 4 silver out of 24, which is a sixth of the purchase. How long is the period of time, the window for which to collect your ayna? Only the amount of time it takes to show a professional or a relative to know if you got a good deal or you were ripped off. Anyway, Rabbi Tarfon issued a ruling in Lod that the ayna is 8 silver coins out of 24 silver coins, which is basically a third. The merchants of Lod were thrilled with that until they said, but the guy has all day to retract. And they said, you know what, we'll stick to the old pshat. We like the rabbi's position better because the smaller the window, the better off we are. If you want to give the guy a full day's window, that's not, because a lot of retrading going on. Not interested in that. Okay. So, Rav says that the definition of shtus means a sixth of the value of the item being sold. That's what shir ayna is. Shmuel says it's sixth of the money, meaning either direction. Okay, it's also included and has the din ona. Okay, we'll see more, of course, about this in today's daf. The subject of ona is a little bit longer than just yesterday's daf. So if something is worth six and it was being sold for five, or something was worth six and being sold for seven, so everybody would say that you go by this, by the item itself, and that would be ona. But the machlokas is something worth five and it's being sold for six, or something is was sold for six and it's really worth seven. So I'm sorry, something worth five for six and something worth seven for six. So according to Shmuel, who says that it goes by the money, so then both of these are ona cases because it's a sixth in one direction. Okay, and depending on your perspective. Okay, but according to Rav, since it goes by the mekach, so the 5 for 6 is a bitul mekach because that's more than onah. And the 7 for 6 is a mechila because it's less than onah, because it goes by what the value is. Anyway, Shmuel says that mechila and bitul mekach is only when it's not a sixth in either direction, meaning it's neither side is a sixth. Okay, but if it's a sixth in one of the sides, so that would be on the onah line that has a status of onah, which we'll clarify soon what that means practically when it's on the onah line or more than the onah. We're basically saying that if it's more than the onah line, then it negates the sale. If it's on the onah line, it doesn't necessarily negate the sale, just guarantees his money back, basically. We'll see more about it coming up. Anyway, so we learned in the Mishnah that the onah is 4 silver out of 24. So the question is, which is a shtus lemekach. So what's the case? Is it something worth 20 that's being sold for 24? And that's a sixth of the money. It's also included in that, because that's what it's saying. So the Gemara says, no. It means something that's worth 24 that's being sold for 20. So then that means that the seller was messed up. So then, but it sounds very clearly that we're only giving a window, the amount of time that it takes to show to the merchant, the professional, or the relative. But that's only by the buyer, that protection window that's so small. The seller's protection window is forever. Okay, there is no limitation for the seller that was sold, that undersold to its beneath its value. So we said the other way around. It was worth 24, but it was sold for 28. Okay, so then we went to Rabbi Tarfon, the Sefer of the Mishnah. Rabbi Tarfon issued a ruling that in Lod, that the onah is 8 out of 24, a third of the mekach. So what was the case? He sold, it was worth 16, he sold it for 24. And you see a third of the money even. So the Gemara says, no, what was worth 24 was sold for 16. So the Gemara says, then who was the one who lost out? The seller was underselling beneath its value. Problem is that he said it's kolayom, and Rav Nachman says that the time frame limit is only to the buyer, not to the seller. So clearly, we're talking about the other direction. So it was worth 24, and it's being sold for 32. That's the case, and that is as far as we got to yesterday.